The following podcast is sponsored by SuperheroStuff.com.
Welcome, everyone, to this, our 75th episode here, H2O, on Sci-Fi from Your Radio. My name is Jason Hunt, and I am joined by...
You do remember my name after 75.
Well, yeah, but you could say...
Oh, I'm introducing myself. Timothy Harvey.
Timothy Harvey, who is...
He doesn't remember my name.
We've been along for the ride now for 75
episodes. 75 episodes. And we didn't start off as a weekly either.
No. We started weekly when Superhero Stuff came on as a sponsor. And they said, hey, go check out this show. It's a weekly chat about science fiction. And we said...
We're weekly?
Well, I guess we're weekly now. So there we are. Yeah, we talk about various different things on our podcast. And this particular one, we are recording live at Kansas City Comic Con. It is a brand new science fiction and comic book convention in the Kansas City area. And we're excited to be here. Looking forward to having some good interaction with folks.
We also have an audience.
We do have an audience. Yes, we have people sitting in the audience. Hi, people in the audience. You can see. Hey, look over there.
And it's early, so they're still cheering.
Yes.
As opposed to the booing.
Now, sometimes we do, most of the time we do this show with coffee. It's very rare that we don't.
Right, yeah.
So we're going to see how long we go before that...
The twitching starts and
So one of the things that we find interesting, every week we sit down and kind of look at each other and say, okay, what are we going to talk about this week? And some weeks the topic just presents itself.
Oh, yeah.
The week we talked about Uwe Boll, I mean, that just dropped right there in front of us. And Arthur Sydam being one, Galacticon. Just some of the recent episodes that we've had where we talk about things. And this particular episode, we're kind of kicking around, looking at each other, thinking, what are we going to talk about? And some might think that makes us sound a little bit maybe unprepared, but there's so many things to talk about that it's hard to pick just one. I mean, we could talk about our experiences here at Kansas City Comic Con. We could talk about, you know, more convention talk in general.
Sure.
Things that we think make a convention work, things that don't work. But, you know, we're not going to talk specifically about this con, something not working, because we haven't run into that yet. What do you want to do?
Well, there's a couple things
you know what we could do.
What's that?
Is we could take suggestions from the audience.
We could.
We could do like an Ask Me Anything, because none of these people that are in the audience have listened to the show. So they could ask us about the show, and we could tell them about the show, and then they know about the show.
Well, that could work.
It could.
Does anybody have any questions? yes, hi. Sir. Oh, well, we had a question.
What made us want to do this? This show actually got started as the result of a conversation that you and I had, that Tim and I had, about Santa Claus being a Time Lord. And our very first episode, we were originally going to do this as video, and our very first episode is on our YouTube channel, and it's called Santa Claus is a Time Lord. And we basically go through all of the different pieces of evidence to support the notion that Santa Claus and James Bond are Time Lords, mostly Santa Claus. So that was our first one, and then from there we just decided to go ahead and just keep doing the show. And I think we were every other week for about the first 15
more
episodes.
Or less, yeah, because we had some bigger gaps in that every now and again.
Yeah, because you know, every time we sit down and we talk about some different things, we'd get into these long conversations about, you know, pick a topic out of the air, and then we'd look at each other and we'd say, you know, we really should be recording these. Because there were good conversations.
Oh, yeah.
And
well, we thought so anyway.
You know, we're proud of ourselves. But yeah, it was one of those things where we sat and we said, okay, this could be content. Because you had just come on.
Just come on as a writer, yeah.
And we were talking about different topics, and it was just a natural progression of the discussions where we were sitting there talking about these things, and we said, well, we should be recording these so people could listen to us ramble and rant about these things. And so here we are.
Well, of course, like any good conversation. I mean, Jason and I agree on a lot of stuff, and we don't agree on a lot of stuff, and we can very easily see things from different angles. And even when we both really like something, like anybody else, we like it for either subtly different reasons or wildly different reasons. So it gives you a chance to actually explore something from a different perspective. And we're both old enough and geeky enough that our depth of knowledge on some of this stuff is actually, it's kind of surprising how much we find out that we know about something that we have not necessarily thought about, or how much we don't know about something that we're like, oh, I know everything. Oh, I don't know anything about this. Which is actually kind of fun, too, because you get a chance to, especially when we come up with a topic that we need to research, and we need to sit there and dive into a little more. It's like,
except the Yukos.
Except
the,
well.
we haven't really wanted to dive into that one yet.
Who doesn't know what we're talking about there? Okay. Short version, because we're not going to get into this.
Is there a short version?
There's, yeah, the very, very short version is that the Hugo Awards is one of the oldest science fiction awards. It's actually done awarded at WorldCon, mm-hmm. Which is in London? No, this year it's London. London was last year.
This year it's in Oregon, Portland?
Portland, yeah.
Are they up in Portland?
Yeah, Portland, I think.
And next year it's here.
Yeah, right, and which makes it even more of a big deal. It's a great opportunity for Kansas City to have that con here. It's generally a huge deal. But the award is voted on by the membership. You have to, you become a member of WorldCon.
It's the World Science Fiction Society is the official organization. And they don't have a whole lot of participation every year.
Yeah, it's not a huge convention, although it's got a big footprint. It's not a huge attendance, but it's got a significant impact on the genre, especially in publishing. And this year, there has been some controversy over the nominees, and the controversy has gotten ugly.
Very ugly.
And it's.
Basically, there's a group of people, Brad Torgerson and Larry Correa and Fox Day, what's his name? Ted Beale.
Yeah.
Have put together, organized some movement to try to get some nominees on the ballot that are not necessarily politically correct, let's say.
Way to put it.
Yeah, well, I mean, that is. I mean, their contention is that for the last few years the Hugos have become politicized, and the nominees that get on the slate are all about gender politics or social politics or that kind of thing, as opposed to telling good science fiction stories. And a lot of times you're going to get an intersection between those two, but their notion is that these books are getting nominated specifically because of the political aspects of it rather than the storytelling aspects. And so what they wanted to do is they wanted to put together a slate of nominees that would reflect more of a balance across the spectrum. And their slate of nominees is all over the place in terms of gender and orientation and the types of stories that are told. You've got hard science fiction and action science fiction and all these different things. Women writers and minority writers and all this. But then you have the blowback that says, oh, you're just white conservatives.
Well, and if it,
how
it,
dare
it,
you?
And if it was as simple as that, but unfortunately it's also got personalities.
Right.
And a lot of anger.
Because Fox Day's right in the middle of it, and everybody went, how dare he even
be involved? Yeah,
there's a lot of back and forth and blowback.
And it's very, very easy, is the more we looked into this, and we actually have an episode, if you go back into our archive, you can actually find us trying really, really hard to not turn it into what we are trying to turn into here either. It's a rabbit hole.
Yeah.
It gets so ugly so quickly between people who are some really, really talented people and some very, very loud people. And if you, and on other episodes of the show, you can hear Jason and I talk about how the internet is often, it's not the best information. It's often the person screaming the loudest.
On both sides.
And there's. I mean, we're not. This isn't a right or left thing. It's just the people on the internet are the ones screaming, and the reason discussion about anything. You have to hunt for it, because it's a high profile in the community kind of thing. I mean, the Hugos are an important award, or have been traditionally an important award.
But it becomes this thing where you're peeling back a layer of something that you don't think of as being politicized in any way, and discovering just how ugly it gets real quick. This is something that's not isolated to one convention. You've got George R. R. Martin saying,
he's basically said, there have been slates before.
Sure.
Block voting and that kind of thing, which is one of the things that the groups, the Sad Puppies and the Rabid Puppies, have said, this is something that we'd rather would avoid, and just everybody needs to participate. And ironically, the Sasquan organization that's running Worldcon this year had said they've had a record number of participants in the Hugo voting this year, which is a good result. You get more people participating in the process, then you democratize it a little bit more, and there's less chance of one particular group, whether it's an ideological group or a political group, or just, we're all friends and let's keep everybody out group. The more people that participate, the less chance there is of those groups skewing the results. And one of the things that we've really, really tried to avoid is getting into taking any kind of a stance on this, because there are so many different angles to it. It's like looking at a Picasso painting sideways. It's just it's a mess.
Yeah.
Not to say Picasso's a mess. He's not. But, it's that trying to discern the actual facts of the matter as opposed to what everybody else says is going on. And like Tim said, it's a rabbit hole.
Yeah.
And it's been one of those things where we just look at it and it's like, no.
It's like part of you wants to talk about it, and then part of you is like, this is going to get ugly and messy really fast, and I don't know if I want to go there. So, and unfortunately, at some point, we're going to have to, because, of course, it is coming here. Hopefully by that point, we'll have some of the dust will settle. And because right now, it's not done. I mean, it's an ongoing emotional mess among fans attacking each other, unfortunately. So,
yeah, like you do, because it's the internet, and that's what people do. So. I think we answered a question.
Well, we went far afield, too.
How do we get started?
Pretty much.
Yeah. How do we get started, and then what do we avoid?
Yeah. As we talked about what we avoid.
Yeah. Anybody else?
Yeah.
Yes.
What would you really define as science fiction?
Ooh.
What would we define as science fiction?
Let's narrow that down a little bit. No. What is science fiction?
We actually talked about a little bit on a couple of different things. We talked about it on our show. We've talked about it on Echo Chamber. We had a chance to get Greg Cox from Tor Books and Ellen Datlow, who's a Hugo Award-winning editor, speaking of the Hugos. And who else was on that show?
Oh, wow.
John Ordover,
who
used to edit the Star Trek books. And they were all talking about what is science fiction. And it kind of boils down, and I think we've run across this too. It's one of these things where I know it when I see it. Science fiction for me is mostly the ray guns and the spaceships and the aliens and that kind of thing. It's not so much the zombies. It's big ideas, things that make you think. Whether it's Heinlein or Bradbury or something that really causes you to, when you read this book, it helps you kind of understand a little bit about the human condition, as it were. I mean, that's such a trite phrase, but science fiction is really about self-examination for me. And in the process of doing that, you tell a really good story with ray guns and spaceships and pew-pew, and that's fine. I'm not one so much for the navel-gazing type of science fiction that's just, boring. But some people go for that. It's one of those things where it's a matter of taste for a lot of people.
Well, the good news is that there's a wide, wide range. I mean, there's no one hard and fast, only this kind of thing is science fiction. Speculative fiction is also a term that's often used when referring to what most people think of as science fiction, because it's asking what if. What if we went to the moon? Well, we did. What if we go to the asteroid belt? Well, we just did. what if we, you know, it, or we just took a ride on an asteroid anyway, but I mean, what if we, you know, what if we go to the next star system? What if we live forever? What if we, and you can have, you end up with your post-apocalyptic stuff, which includes zombies and that sort of thing, in a broad sense, but you can have some good navel gazing. I mean, Stranger in a Strange Land by Heinlein is very much a navel gazing novel.
It is, but it's engaging because you have characters that you can follow along, and you.
But at the same time, I mean, science. The nice thing about science fiction is that it does give us a chance to look at each other and ourselves. Of course, Star Trek carved a huge path for everybody else, and it was, you know, Star Trek was all about looking at ourselves through a science fiction lens. It was social commentary. It was social questions. It was asking us who we were and what we were doing and what we wanted to be when we grew up with Wagon Train to the Stars. And Star Wars is classic mythology retold with warp drives and Death Stars and...
Wait. You did that on purpose.
I did that on purpose. Of course, I did that on purpose.
I'm just joking.
I crossed the two you're never supposed to cross. But it's the great thing about science fiction is that there is a voice out there probably telling a story for every one of us. And we've seen this explode with young adult stuff too. Because for a long time it was there wasn't stuff out there. It just maybe
just
the,
wasn't a lot.
There wasn't a lot, and maybe the quality wasn't. They weren't looking at it. Science fiction, mystery, genre fiction in general has sometimes had this sort of, that's nice kind of attitude.
Read those kind of books?
Yeah, exactly. Which has always been, you know, there's any time you have anything where somebody looks at down their nose at a kind of storytelling or something, it's always a bad idea. And we've seen, if you're of a certain age, like over 20, you've been able to watch that change. You know, Star Wars really did change things. Star Trek really did change things in terms of entertainment, and the explosion of things like Harry Potter. The Marvel movies, you know, all this stuff has changed the way that people look, the general public looks at genre storytelling, science fiction and fantasy and comic books. Who here is actually a comic book reader versus a comic book movie fan? About half and half. Okay, good. Okay. All right, good. Okay. For a long, long time, these conventions were basically, it was the comic book readers. That's were the ones who were coming here. And then they liked the movies and the TV shows, too. But it's changed. The whole audience is growing. I mean, it's grown at an incredible rate with Robert Downey Jr., basically. Yeah. Basically exactly. Changed everything.
And it's funny that you ask, you know, what's the definition of science fiction? Because this debate has been going on since the 20s. I mean, was it Heinlein and Asimov that went after each other that said, oh, you don't write science fiction?
I'm not sure if it was those two, but there were two different groups. It was the futurists and
the... futurists and the true fans. And right. Actually... centered around the Hugo.
Yeah, centered around Hugo Awards, yeah. Because it's not new.
Yeah.
And they were looking at each other and basically going, well, your stuff isn't the real stuff.
Yeah.
You know? And...
it's not real science fiction.
And, you know, but the thing is that you look at, say, I mean, and most science fiction, the best science fiction, I think, is the stuff that you don't need to have the spaceship or the cloning or the teleportation. The Handmaid's Tale, okay? Mm. Margaret Atwood, it's a science fiction novel. I don't think there's any real high tech in there at all. But it's speculative fiction. It's looking at a future world, 1984.
Yeah.
Frankenstein. Frankenstein is widely considered one of the first, if not the first, science fiction novel. Most people think of it as horror.
Fahrenheit 451.
There's just this incredible range of what, as long as you're kind of telling a story that asks, you know, if, and wasn't there a magazine called If? I think there was. I think there was one of the old pulp magazines was called If, and that's just. And they, in many ways, that's kind of the core question. If dot dot dot, and if you can run with that, and if you run in the direction where science, or looking at things through a something resembling a scientific lens, I guess, it's probably science fiction.
Next.
Is there a next?
How do you pick your topics?
Randomly. No.
Like I said, sometimes it is completely random. Sometimes it just is an extension out of some conversation that we've had in the last week or so.
Or it's a conversation where I show up at the recording studio and Jason goes, "Did you hear about?" Or I walk in and go,
Did you see this?
Yeah.
It's like, oh my God. And that happens more often than not. Like I said, sometimes the topics just get handed to us by what's going on in the news, whether it's a casting announcement or some wild controversy, or I guess at some point we're probably going to talk about Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. the stuff that's going on with Josh Trank and all of that. We've talked about. The Star Wars trailer, we've talked about the Batman, I call it Batman Fight Superman because it's a Batman movie with Superman.
Okay, let's hold this on a second. I'm not even going to talk about that. I'm going to ask a dumb question. Who here saw the new Star Wars trailer?
The trailer, not the
trailer,
teaser.
Not the teaser, the full trailer.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Who here had a real emotional reaction when they watched that? Actually found that catch in the throat.
Tears in your eyes.
That almost that tearing up kind of when that happened, did you sit there and go, "Wait, what just happened? What just happened? I'm watching a trailer to a movie."
Well,
and I'm going
even for the teaser, the very first thing we ever saw. You know, the first time that you see the Millennium Falcon flying again, and that music starts. I resisted watching it online because I didn't want to see it online first. That's something you see in the theater first. So I waited, and my son and I went to see Big Hero 6 again. He's like, "Why are we going to see this again? I'm not buying a ticket to Big Hero 6. I'm buying a ticket to a 30-second trailer." But that is the kind of thing that you see in the theater. And then when it comes online, you can watch it, 5 million times afterward. But yeah,
I almost killed the battery on my phone. I was at work.
Yeah.
I just kept playing it over and over and over again.
Yeah, and when Harrison Ford says, "Chewie, we're home," there is that moment where you sit there and go, I can't believe it's been 30 years. You know, you're 10 again, and
seven.
Suddenly it's there. It's there. You're back in that world.
And it feels, and we've talked a lot about the fact that there's a lot of remakes happening and there's a lot of reboots happening, and I will maintain till I die that that's what we do as a species. All the different versions of Robin Hood, all the different versions of King Arthur, the fact that we have a new set of Star Trek actors playing the Star Trek characters is not surprising. But there's something about going back to that core group of people, the original cast, and making it feel real. And it feels like it's not.
Right.
It doesn't feel like it's let's just bring them all together and get some money. It's more like,
It's like, we finally get that last piece.
Yeah. So
now the big question is whether or not Disney's going to overdo it. And,
a film every year? Forever?
Yeah. For as long as we make money.
Yeah, so I don't know about that, but we'll see.
I tell you, I am not that enthusiastic about the Han Solo movie because that story, to me, has already been told, and Crispin told it in the Han Solo trilogy. And she did such a phenomenal job there of giving Han Solo his backstory. Yeah, I'm hoping that they at least reference some of it. I know they won't, but it would be nice if they did because it was a really solid growing up piece. And there's actually some stuff at the very end of the last book that could easily tie in with Rogue One if they did it right.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. I mean, it's very interesting that Disney kind of dismantled the expanded universe, but they also seem to be pulling from some of the expanded universe.
If what's her name? The lead? Who's the lead? What's her name again?
Oh goodness.
No. In Rogue One, I just went blank on her name. But if she ends up playing Brea Theron, I'll be happy.
You had a question?
Yeah.
Well, and we talk about this too because and Jason and I are of a certain age, 45-ish. And there's a whole lot of okay. If you're listening to this and you don't know what we're talking about, turn to the old person to your left and ask them what a rotary phone is.
We're in the last generation that didn't have the internet.
Right.
We're the last generation that didn't have personal computers.
My daughter is going to be 25 this year, and she never has known a world where they didn't have cable or the internet or cell phones. And if you are, if you're younger or older than that, you kind of go, well, I kind of remember this or that. I think it's interesting what comes back because, of course, we have phonographs back, record players, vinyl. But we've also been, and one of the reasons I think we like this so much we were born at just the right time, because we had our parents telling us how cool Star Trek was, and getting us started on that when we were really, really little.
My mom didn't want me to watch Star Trek.
Well, my dad was cooler than your mom. We got Star Wars and we got Raiders of the Lost Ark. Back to the Future. We got Star Trek,
Alien.
The motion picture, Alien. All of this stuff that really just, because science fiction had kind of gone by the wayside when it came to film. You weren't seeing really, you had 2001 was really the last big event movie.
Yeah, and really through the 70s, pretty much the only thing you had was the Planet of the Apes series, which was low budget.
Yeah.
And, it didn't have a huge audience, big following.
So, I mean, Star Wars, we talk about Star Wars changing everything a lot because it really did. But then you had this explosion through the 80s. Of course, you had the big genre explosion where you had everything from action films to horror films to science fiction films, the video explosion. I mean, they just threw this stuff out there, and a lot of it was awful. Star Trek came back to TV. You had your cable channel, cable explosion. So people were looking to fill content. They were looking to fill holes. So you had, all the syndicated shows, most of which were terrible, but you watched them every week.
Do you guys remember there was something when cable started? There was this thing called the Sci-Fi Channel. And I think
vague fuzzy memories. They used to have science fiction programming, didn't they?
Yeah, I think something like that. Okay, I think they went away about 6 years ago. And actually, right before we started as a website.
How's that happen? Interesting. Sci-fi.
The timing on that.
The Sci-Fi Channel has a very interesting experiment in what's happening a lot in cable television right now anyway. Because you see this, they're not the only ones who did this.
Right.
They built it. They built a market for themselves. They built a niche. It's like, okay, we're going to be the TV channel for the science fiction fans. And over on another channel, we're going to be the TV channel for the history fans. And we're going to be the TV channel for the home improvement fans or the cooking fans. And nobody stayed the way that they started off. They've all become these different wide-ranging, producing original content for the
TLC, anyone?
Yeah. Remember when that stood for the Learning Channel? When was the last time you learned anything on the... Well, I learned a lot of... I can learn a lot of things from the TLC, none of which I necessarily want to learn.
Right.
There was a time when you said things... You had Farscape, and you had... Stargate, and you had... I mean, they were experimenting with you know, long-form storytelling, story arcs that we're used to for things like Lost or just everything on television right now. Nothing. There's nothing episodic anymore, which is okay. I'm perfectly fine with that. But Farscape cut brand new ground with that in the science fiction world, and they didn't know what to do with it. So they canceled it. And then what, right after that, we got 24 and Lost and all of that stuff where it's like, oh yeah, long form storytelling. Sure. Great. No problem. And it was all kind of downhill for sci-fi. Then, the introduction of wrestling, of course, was always a good sign. They're bringing back original content.
Yeah, they are.
And it's interesting. It's interesting to watch because we're getting that bounce back, which is probably, which is a good thing.
Yeah. And that's something we can talk about after the break. Yes. We usually take a break in the middle of our show so people can hear from our sponsor, which is superherostuff.com. They have all sorts of licensed merchandise, and we have an agreement with them. They sponsor our show, and they're the ones that actually told us to go weekly. Well, they didn't tell us.
No.
They thought we were a weekly show, so we went, okay, I guess we're a weekly show. So that's where we are. So we're going to take a break and let you hear from superherostuff.com. And on the other side of it, we will take more questions from our audience here at Kansas City Comic Con when H2O continues.
You're listening to H2O on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Where can you get Age of Ultron stuff?
Superherostuff.com.
Where can you get Justice League stuff?
Superherostuff.com.
Where can you get Doctor Who stuff?
Superherostuff.com.
Where can you get Daredevil stuff?
Superherostuff.com.
New items being added all the time. Get your superhero stuff at superherostuff.com. Plus, the Hero Box is back. $70 worth of superhero stuff for only $49. Superherostuff.com, where heroes shop.
Atomic Cotton, where Erica and Zach combine their passion for art and film to create wearable art. All original, made with a love for the genre. Coming to a convention near you very soon, or find them on the web at atomiccotton.com. Atomic Cotton, shirts and art for fans by fans.
Hi, this is Jason Hunt, and if you're one of the dedicated listeners for this show, first of all, thank you. Second, you are sharing with others, are you not? And you should be aware by now, we have many shows as part of Sci-Fi for Me Radio. Our Marvel discussion on Level 1187, the DC chat on the Rogues Gallery, Sci-Fi for Chicks talking about various topics, which we also do in mixed company on the Echo Chamber, and H2O, which is our one-on-one discussion between Mr. Harvey and myself, now syndicated over at Amazing Stories Magazine. Sci-Fi for Me Radio is more than one show, and we'd like to invite you to join us for all of it, or at least try it out and see what you think. And also check out Sci-Fi for Me TV, that's our YouTube channel, where we have interviews, convention panel video, and Week in Review, where we deliver a digest of the news of the week. All part of giving you the most bang for your buck. Oh yeah, wait, no, it's free. So check it out, Sci-Fi for Me Radio and Sci-Fi for Me TV, all part of SciFiForMe.com, your portal to the science fiction multiverse.
This is Tom Kane, the voice of a Jedi Master named Yoda, I am. And we're at Kansas City Comic Con, and you're listening to SciFiForMe.com.
Welcome back to our 75th episode here, H2O, on Sci-Fi for Me Radio. Jason Hunt here, along with Timothy Harvey.
Hello.
We are talking about lots of different things.
With a live audience.
We have an audience, and they're asking us questions.
They were more enthusiastic before we started talking. You realize that?
I know.
Yeah, that's how it usually works.
Well, it's the lack of coffee. Remember,
I know.
It's the lack of coffee.
We did tell them that there was coffee.
With coffee.
You know, they'd be more happy if we brought them coffee too. We have to remember that for next time. Well, I'd be happy. Intern? Oh wait, she's not an intern anymore.
She's not. No. For those of you who are wondering, our intern Allie Ulrich over here sometimes engineers our shows this summer.
Who is not our intern anymore?
No.
She's graduated from her internship
and survived.
We our interns don't die.
No.
Or are not taken by dark forces.
That's right.
Yet.
Yeah. Well, and before the break, we were talking about the Sci-Fi Channel coming back. I need to catch up. It's funny because we were making a list of all the shows that we were going to recap this fall. And I'm making all of these, you know, all of the list of all these shows. And it strikes me that how many of them are not sci-fi shows. They're not on the Sci-Fi Channel anymore. And Cami Settle asked me about a couple of them. She said, are we not doing the sci-fi shows? Because Killjoys and Dark Matter are on right now, and I have such a hard time keeping up with everything that's out there because, you know, like I said, mm-hmm. science fiction has just exploded on TV. And I'm making a list, and it's something like 20, 25, 30, 40 shows that are coming out here in the fall and the mid-season. And, you know, finding writers to write recaps for half of those shows has been a challenge, but it hit me that I've basically just kind of let sci-fi kind of sit over here on its own little back burner, not really paying much attention to it, and I shouldn't do that because sci-fi is trying, they are making an effort to come back to the science fiction genre that made them a success.
How many years have that's a fair thing for you to be doing though? Because in how many years has it been wrestling and Sharknado?
Well, it's still Sharknado.
I know, but at least wrestling. I mean, but it was everything was Sharknado. It was or Shark versus or, you know, I mean the Asylum. God love the Asylum, because they're putting people to work. Not for very much. NPR had a really, really neat interview with somebody who was talking about being a writer for the Asylum.
Yeah.
Oh, it was hysterical. But it's you don't really watch, if you're going for science fiction or fantasy, you don't go to the sci-fi. You didn't go to the Sci-Fi Channel.
No.
Who here has actually watched any of Killjoys or Dark Matter?
I've seen the first episode of Dark Matter. I have not.
I've watched them both.
I've heard good things about them.
And they look, they're Killjoys is better than Dark Matter.
Dark Matter, the first. I watched the first episode. That show feels to me very much like late 80s, early 90s science fiction.
It's Firefly meets Farscape meets Stargate. It is they are not treading new ground on either of these shows.
And the effects is what makes it feel like that for me. It feels like that kind of, it's almost like they went for that particular aesthetic on purpose.
I would agree. But the what's interesting about them is that they are actually paying attention to the writing. And anyone who has listened to our show is going to hear there's a refrain that pops up periodically. It's called story, story, story. Mm. I don't care what your special effects look like. I don't care who's in your film or TV show. If your story's garbage, it's not worth watching. And what's surprising is they're actually paying attention to world building. And they're paying attention to building an environment for these people to be running around doing their, you know, in their spaceships and ray guns and all that stuff. It's moderately encouraging for something that has kind of, it's been, why would I watch the Sci-Fi Channel? What possible reason could there be?
When we first got the news that that Sci-Fi had named Bill McGoldrick as vice president of programming, and his marching orders were, get us a series in space and get us a movie, get us a miniseries. That was encouraging to me because the last real solid miniseries they did was Battlestar Galactica, and they'd done Dune. Children of Dune, not quite as good as Dune, but to hear that they were actually going to put money into a miniseries, of course, we got Ascension, which, you know, they've been out of it for a while.
They were
rusty.
Still rusty.
But, you know, it was good to see them they were making an effort. And so with that, and now we've got The Expanse coming up. They're doing Childhood's End.
Expanse is supposed to have, I mean, The Expanse's early reviews are really, really good.
Yeah,
so it's very curious
about this. So, yeah, I'm cautiously optimistic about the return of sci-fi as a science fiction channel. Of course, it impacts our world domination plans a little bit.
Only a little bit.
I think I'll be okay with that if we can get a good, solid science fiction cable network. Like we used to have, I'm willing to give them a little wiggle room.
A little bit.
Yeah. Anybody else?
Yes.
Do you guys appreciate what Sci-Fi tried to do when they brought back Battlestar Galactica?
Yes.
We appreciate the return of Battlestar Galactica?
Okay, here's what I will answer, because he's going to waffle there. Yes, because they took they did the kind of the thing with a reboot that you should do with a reboot, which is you should take the idea of something, and you can even keep the names, or some of the names or some of the base, you know, some of the designs and that sort of stuff. But you tell your own story. You don't slavishly repeat all the same story beats. You don't make it a carbon copy that everyone's going to sit there and go, why are you doing this? And you go your own way, and you might not be successful. People are going to argue the ending of the Battlestar Galactica TV series. Some people loved it, some people hated it, some people were like, oh, that's okay, whatever. But for 3 or 4 times as long as the original series.
And it got a Peabody.
They were telling interesting stories.
Now.
And they were taking chances with their storytelling too. And they weren't afraid to, they weren't locked into looking at characters from that show and going, right. Oh, we can't, you know, because that's Starbuck or because that's Apollo, we can't go here.
Like, now, well, I was with them all the way up until they were in the camp, and then they jumped. They did the time jump a little bit. And after that, it kind of felt to me like they went off the rails a little. And then the ending, of course, was just, to me, it was just pure hokum. But, you know, on the flip side of what Tim's talking about, you know, you take the idea of something and you go your own way with it. Sometimes you get something like Battlestar Galactica. Sometimes you get Bionic Woman, which did that very same thing. You take the idea of something and tell your own story, and it was just awful. And sometimes you run into knowing too much before you see it, you know, because everything's online and they make all these announcements about the show, and here's somebody who's playing this somebody, and this is the story synopsis and all these different things, and then of course you get the internet rage. This is just going to be the worst terrible thing ever. But there is some to that, because when they first were talking about Bionic Woman when the reboot happened. And as soon as I heard Jamie Summers is a bartender, I immediately shut off. I was like, that's not Bionic Woman. Jamie Summers isn't a bartender. She's a tennis player. She's a teacher. You know, there's a specific reason why they give these characters particular backgrounds that they give them. So, you know, it's sometimes it's a good thing to do your own thing, but sometimes it's better to continue rather than reboot.
Bionic Woman would have worked better as a TV show if they had just gone a complete break with any of the other character names.
And I mean, just a brand name.
Right, just a brand. You could even call it the Bionic Woman, and just, but as long as you did, is once you Jamie Summers, or you do a $6 billion movie man thing.
That's coming.
With and as soon as you name, you know, Steve Austin,
there's an expectation.
And there's a reference point that, especially if you are... The only reason to make a show like that is you're doing it for the folks who remember watching it. Okay? Well, honestly, you know, if you want to tell a new story with that, you call it Cyborg, and you go back to the Martin Kiden book, and you sit there and retell that story.
Well, they're going to be doing a new movie version of Armageddon 2419 AD, which is the original novel that was the basis for the Buck Rogers stories. So you had the Buck Rogers serials and the Buck Rogers TV show and all of that. Armageddon 2419 was the original book, very much like Cyborg was the basis for $6 Million Man. And now they're going to be doing, you look at Fantastic Four, you know, taking so many liberties with that origin story, as far as everybody knows out in the public who haven't seen it. I mean, yes, it's more the ultimate Fantastic Four than the others, but a lot of the reviews that I've seen have said this: if you took this story with different names for the characters and a different title, and you didn't call it Fantastic Four and it's not Reed Richards, it would be a perfectly fine as a science fiction show. But as soon as you put Fantastic Four on there, there's an expectation. You know, Spider-Man, the Avengers, Star Trek. When I went and saw the first Star Trek that J.J. Abrams made, he had me up until the title card. You know, when Sam Kirk dies, and then you get the big Star Trek up on the screen, you know, first 5 minutes of the movie, I'm okay. Okay so far. This, not bad. It's okay. It's a rock'em sock'em roller coaster kind of thing. Okay, fine. But all the way through the rest of that movie, I was sitting there thinking, that's not right. And when they killed Spock's mother, that's when they lost me. So there is that expectation that you get when you're dealing with known properties that you don't have when you're dealing with a brand new thing. So, you know, Killjoys, or, you know, if they had given Battlestar Galactica a completely different name, then would it have done as well? I don't know.
It wouldn't have had the initial audience. Because no. the initial audience was again, they were of a certain age. They were in their late 30s or their late 20s into their maybe their 50s, and they were going, I remember that. What's this? Edward James Olmos. What?
Yeah.
And they tuned in and went, oh, this is kind of cool. So.
Well, and I remember when Battlestar Galactica came on for the very first time back in 78. We were living in Little Rock, Arkansas, and my dad had thrown his back out. So, and these are very specific emotional mm-hmm. ties that you have yeah. to certain pieces of media throughout the years. I remember the first time I saw Star Wars. I remember the first time I saw Star Trek. Well, I actually remember the first time when I saw an advertisement on the back cover of a comic book. It was for the first Star Trek movie. Yeah, I remember reading a comic book and I flipped the book and it was, they're making a Star Trek movie. I was so excited. You know, this, you know, I'm 8 years old. And those things happen and you remember those things and they stick with you. They stay in your psyche and they do color your perceptions of everything that you see and read now.
Sure.
Should we do one more question? Yes, in the front. A wrestling science fiction show? If we
sure.
were to pitch a
Actually,
wrestling science fiction show.
I've got an idea for one.
Yes.
Okay. It's the story of a wrestler who goes to, he's a wrestler, and he it's a perfectly ordinary job until he encounters a young man in a spider mask who beats him and completely changes his life because he realizes this young man is going to grow into something great with great power and great responsibility. And so he becomes something else other than a wrestler. Oh, wait.
I thought one time when they first announced, the wrestling was coming to the Sci-Fi Channel, I said, oh, is there going to be aliens?
Yeah.
Is this going to be a thing?
Sci-fi wrestling.
You know, make it sci-fi wrestling. Sure, you know, throw me in a ring with an Andorian. It's now it fits.
I want to see that now. You in a ring with an Andorian.
I'm not going to get in the ring with an Andorian, but I'm just saying, you know, that kind of thing. If it's just regular wrestling, there's no business being on the Sci-Fi Channel. If it's going to be wrestling that's got some sort of a science fiction motif, you know, even if it's just a pastiche that's just, you know, for kicks and giggles, then that's how you do that. They did it with the robot wrestling. The
robot jocks?
Yeah, robot jocks.
Yeah.
You know, all of the combat show.
Mm-hmm.
That they
Battle bots
did.
And that sort
Battle
of thing.
Battle bots. And that's science fiction wrestling. You know, you put the robots in there and let them duke it out and see what happens. And there's all sorts of different things that you can do for that.
Other than that, no, not really.
No, wrestling does not belong on science fiction unless it's a science fiction story. And that's the other thing, too, is science fiction crosses over into a lot of other genres. And you look at something like Captain America, the First Avenger, or Captain America, the Winter Soldier, rather. It's not a science fiction movie. It's not a comic book movie. It's a spy thriller with the comic book colors painted on top of it.
Ant-Man isn't a comic book movie. It's a heist movie
yeah.
with superheroes.
Alien is not a science fiction movie. Alien is a...
Well, Alien's a haunted house film.
It just happens to have the science fiction painted on top. And that's what makes those stories work, is you don't look at them and say, oh, how can we make these sci-fi? No, you tell the stories about the characters, and all of the rest of it is just window dressing. And I think that's one of the strongest... ways that you could tell a science fiction story is to tell the story about the people first, make it about something, and then where you put it is, you know, it could be Wagon Train to the Stars, it could be Star Trek, and you're telling the same kind of story.
So real quick, with all the superhero TV shows and movies, do you think it's like too much all at once?
The bubble, the
bubble for superhero movies and TV shows.
We actually have a pool. We have a Deadpool for this. One of our contributors, Kendall Sin,
Kendall's given it 2 years.
Yeah.
I'm thinking we're going to be okay as long as we don't get a bad one. But with Fantastic Four now coming out, I don't know. Over on Rogues Gallery, we talked about this a number of times, and Kendall says 2 years. Jeff Hackworth gives it, I think, 10. Mm-hmm. You said 5 or 6.
Yeah.
I'm just willing to ride it out until it falls apart.
I don't think it's not going to go away after 5 or 6 years. But we're not going to have this everything. You know, every network has to have a superhero show. Right. Every studio has to have a superhero film or a superhero like film. The idea of putting out a new film every year from anybody in the same universe is a little, you know, concerns me a little bit in terms of quality. Actually, it concerns me a lot in terms of quality. You should, you know, making films really, really fast is not really a good idea. It doesn't work all that well. I've done it. it could be a recipe for disaster.
You know what else has happened really, really fast?
This hour. Episode. I know. Yes. We're definitely in there.
We're past our limit. We've gotten the wave.
We have.
From the back of the room.
They opened the doors.
Yes. I tell you what, if you have thoughts or comments or questions or suggestions or ideas for topics, you can send us an email, h2o@sci-fi4me.com.
There you go.
Every single time. We are on all the social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Pinterest, Google+, and YouTube. And all the latest headlines and stuff you can find at sci-fi4me.com. You're welcome to join us over there, listen to all of our podcasts, and participate as you like. And we'll have another episode next week.
Yep. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you very much.
This has been a presentation of sci-fi4me.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.